Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I was just about 16 when I went, and after playing in a game against Newcastle, I was asked if I would like to stay on and be a professional footballer.
Hello and welcome to another episode of a Footballer's Life podcast. We kicked off the series last week with Conor Horahan, probably the in-form Irish international at the moment. Graham Cummins has got plenty more of those lined up over the next few weeks. We've got great episodes with the likes of Mark Kinsella and Darren Murphy coming up, and a few others as well. This week, we have probably the in-form Ireland Women's International at the moment, Grace Maloney, Ireland goalkeeper. Grace has been in remarkable form for Reading, regularly featuring in the WSL Team of the Week. She won her first competitive Ireland cap in the qualifier with Germany before Christmas, having initially been part of that golden generation of under-17 girls that reached the European Championship final in 2010. I suppose it's been a slow rise for Grace, in a way, to number one jersey with the Irish team. So we talk a little bit about that. We talk about goalkeeping in general, how it's evolved, the difference between women's goalkeeping and men's goalkeeping, a bit about where her improvements have come from in recent years. She talks about how she's gained confidence. We talk a bit about her Irish background and how it was always Ireland she wanted to play for since she was a little kid. And we talk a little bit about Vera Powell and where Grace stands now in the Irish setup and what are her ambitions from here on. Have a listen. Thanks very much, Grace, for joining us.
No worries.
We have an important bit of business to get done first. Can we claim you as a Tipperary woman? Because we have a severe shortage of Tipperary, Irish internationals from Tip.
My dad's mad monster anyway, so yeah, I'd probably say Tipperary anyway, but my nan wouldn't be too happy on that, but yeah.
your granddad is from Tipperary, is that right, down Shore side?
Yeah, and my nan's from Cavan.
Okay, yeah. We had Shane Long as a Reading player as well for a good few years.
Yeah, I met Shane a few times. Lovely guy. Not here anymore. I wish he still was here. Get us a few goals this season and try and get us up. But yeah.
Was it always like when you were growing up, was the ambition to play for Ireland? Or obviously, I mean, growing up in Slough, wasn't it? Would England would have been on your radar as well, I suppose, would it?
Well, like, to be fair, I'm obviously from a massive Irish family, and my dad's the main football man in the house, and he's just mad Ireland. So it, for me, like, I always had the kits and everything like that. Like, I was invited to England camps and stuff like that. And even now, like, get tweets saying, oh, you're due a call up, and I'm just sending them like tweets back with me with my jersey on or the flag, holding the flag, and I'm like, I don't want one. So for me, no, it's always been Ireland, like since I've been playing anyway.
Yeah, you've put on your social media some lovely pictures of you in an Ireland shirt growing up. What age were you around then?
The one I put up after I got my debut.
Yeah.
I reckon I was about six or seven. I think the jersey actually is looser now than it was back then. It was a bit tight then.
Yeah. And that was Grace. Like, so you mean it was obviously it was a big deal for your family to get the Ireland call up.
Yeah, like it was absolutely massive. And even like after the game against Germany, like obviously the result was what it was, but like just the messages I was getting from all my family over there, like everyone's just scattered across the country. Like my uncle's in Cork and my cousins in Dublin, like Drogheda and up in Cavan or whatever. Like it's just, it's a massive deal, like for all of us. Like every time I get called up, like, but ultimately for me, the gutting thing about being called up to play for that game was my dad couldn't be there.
Of course, yeah.
He comes everywhere. Like when we went to the World Cup, he was in Trinidad. Like he was in Ukraine when in the qualifiers up. Like came to Greece and just comes absolutely everywhere. So for him not to see that, like I FaceTimed him like when I was telling him that I was starting, like I found out just before we left to go for training. And I was buzzing, but I didn't want to tell him, like I was trying to think of a good way to tell him that I was starting. Because all week I was like, oh no, like I'm not starting. Like, so I got to Tala and I was on the pitch after training. I sort of FaceTimed him and I was like, oh dad, like I just want to show you the pitch I'm playing on tomorrow. And he was like, no way, no way. And I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, I'm absolutely buzzing for you. And like my mum just said, all the next day he was just so nervous. Like he was barely talking and everything like that. So that was probably the only thing I was, obviously with the result, but like that was the only thing gutting about that night.
Yeah, you sounded kind of a bit emotional nearly in the interviews afterwards with Tony O'Donoghue and stuff. They were very nice. It was an overwhelming kind of experience nearly. Not that it showed on the pitch, you know, in fairness.
Thanks. I was obviously absolutely delighted to have played, and with him not being there and everything like that, like it has been my absolute dream, like for absolutely ages to start, and getting one of them team photos with the likes of Katie and Denise and stuff like that. Like, but yeah, no, I was really emotional. And even when the national anthem was playing, like I was stood there, like I could feel it, like my eyes welling up, and my mum was like, he was crying, wasn't he? And I was like, yeah. it just meant the absolute world. But
it came across, I must say, it came across in the interviews, like how much it meant. We'll come back to the Ireland stuff in a while there. I just want to touch on, I mean, you've been in every time we look, you're in the team of the week at the moment, in the WSL. How many at this stage? At least three, I'd say.
I think from the Barclays one, I think it's four.
Sorry.
And then there's just other different websites that do ones like that as well. But
yeah. it's been a great season, hasn't it, so far for you?
For me personally, yeah, it's probably been my best season to date. For the team, like, feel like we're struggling a little bit in terms of like attacking wise. We probably like two of our most consistent players attacking wise out with illness and injury. So yeah, like we've drawn a lot of games that we should have won. But them girls are coming back now, so hopefully, like, towards the end of the season, now we can pick up a few more wins rather than draws.
And on a personal level, you say, is there anything particularly done different, or what would you put down to? Or you say it's probably the best consistent spell, I suppose, of your career so far, maybe, is it?
For me, like, I just think I've just started focusing on every little detail. Like, I've got this thing here is called a Whoop, and it focuses on like your heart rate and your sleep and your recovery and everything like that. So I think this has been like a massive thing for me this season. But just in terms of like the lockdown and when the season got ended and stuff like that, like it was obviously hard for everyone. But I just think you've got to like use it in the best way that you can. And I don't live too far from the goalie coach and one of our outfield coaches, so I was doing like sessions with them. And like I remember doing a session and I was training with one of the girls, Farah, and another girl, Brooke. But when I was trying to pass the ball to Farah, if I missed her, I was awful for the rest of them because I was thinking, oh my God, I got hit Farah.
That's the great England international, Farah Williams, of course.
But if I didn't hit Brooke, I didn't care. Like, my coach was just like, you don't care if you don't hit Brooke. But you care if you hit Farah, and they just get worse and worse and worse. He was like, you just need to understand that people make mistakes and you just need to deal with it. You just need to put your hand up, be like, yeah, sorry. And just get on with it. And like just since then, like I just feel like my game's just changed so much, and just him helping me with like, just forget it, just leave it, G. Like it's such a boy mentality in terms of like if they're passing to each other, they just don't care if they don't hit it, they're just like, oh, they'll go and get it. Girls are just like, no, I've got to hit her. I just feel like I've drilled that into my game. And I think for me as well, like life experiences in terms of like stuff that's happened like within my family and stuff, like I just like, I love coming in every day. I'm the first in, I'm the last to leave. Like I want to focus on every little detail, like I want to do extra and stuff like that, like see a nutritionist, and just it's how I can make myself better. And how can I go from, okay, like I'm starting every game, like I feel like it's my best season to date, like I've got my first competitive start, but now where can I go and how can I get there? And to be fair, like the coaches here are brilliant in trying to, right, okay, G, you're there, but like, how can we get there, like to the next level? But yeah, like I just feel like all them factors have played a massive part in my form to date.
And it's, I mean, it's obviously vital in the goalkeeping position to be able to put the odd mistake behind you. Pretty inevitable you're going to make one or two along the way.
Yeah, so we played Man United, not the game just gone, I think it was before Christmas. And one of the goals, I went down way too early for, and it, like, I just, right, it's done, get the ball out of the goal. Like, we're playing. We ended up losing 2-1. I came in like, girls, yeah, poor from me. Like, I'm really sorry. Like, whatever. Like, we were off the next day and I went to my goalie coach. I was like, I can't be off tomorrow. Like, I'm going to have to come in and you're going to have to hit 50 of them where she's hit that ball from until I just stand there and just, because I went down too early. And I was like, I'm just going to stand there. And if you hit it in my face or whatever, I'm just going to stand there and we're just going to do it 50 times and we can go home. And to be fair to him, he's first class. Like, he was in and we did it and then we just went home. But you're right, they happen. It's how you deal with them within the game. But for me, I had to come in the next day because I was just, that's not good enough.
Yeah, that's a great attitude. For people who don't follow it closely, Reading have had big results against some of the bigger teams this season. You've beaten Manchester United, who are challenging for the Champions League places. You've drawn with Arsenal, drawn with Manchester City, conceded probably only maybe one, two goals between those three games. That all must give you a lot of confidence. I mean, you're playing there with some of the best players in the world.
Yeah, for sure. But then, like, that's great, and like, real buzz off them kind of results. But then when we come up against teams that are in and around us, or maybe below us, like, we're not getting the wins that we should be getting because we have the players to get the wins. So, like, as good as that is, it's frustrating because when it comes to playing them other team, it's not that we don't turn up, we do, we're just not finishing our chances. So yeah, no, them results are great, but still need to be better when we play in teams in and around us.
What is the general feeling around the WSL this season? Is there a bigger buzz around it noticeably than in previous seasons?
Yeah, I think so. Like, attracting the likes of obviously Harder and Sam Kerr and having the quality that's already here, like Fran. I grew up with Fran, and like, I know like firsthand what she's capable of, and I still think there's so much more to come from her. Hopefully she can stay fit.
That's Fran Kirby at Chelsea.
Yeah, the buzz is massive, and I just think, like, obviously Chelsea are right up there in Man City, but I still think, like, Everton this season have kicked on a bit, and even Man United had a great start, and I just think every year it's just stepping up. Hopefully, like, it doesn't become the top four and the rest of us. Like, hopefully, like, we can all, like, keep stepping up together, like, all the team.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, there is that danger, isn't there, of the top four kind of drifting away from the end. Is it inevitable that it's going to drift that way, or how do you think the women's game can avoid kind of falling into the same sort of pattern that the men's did?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, because I know there was going to be, I don't know if it's in place or going to be, you have to have a certain amount of players from the UK or something like that. It was talked about. I don't know if this actually is. But I just think for us, obviously, Reading being a Championship side, and you've got Bristol and Birmingham and stuff like that, to get the funding that we get in comparison to like your likes of Man City and Chelsea and like that, for us to still be in and around the top four or five, I think it's brilliant, like, for the club to back us in that way.
Are you all full-time pros now?
So I'd say the squad is, but then obviously we get the youngsters that come up to train and like fill in the numbers for like the 11v11s and stuff like that in training. So yeah, like, all of us are, but then you'd get the young ones that come up that wouldn't be full-time. Yeah.
How long have you been full-time? Is it in recent years, or have you been full-time since you first broke through with Ireland?
That's a good question. I'd say maybe 8 years.
Yeah, about 8 years. Because when you report for Ireland camp, you're dealing with like half the squad are not even semi-pros, or amateurs really. Like, they're
yeah.
Training twice a week in Ireland and trying to do the rest on their own.
I think they do like home based sessions and stuff. So when they're not training with their club, I think they go to and do a session. So all the girls come up from their different clubs and do a home based session. That was one of the things that was put in play. No, like, all the girls are always in great condition when we go in, and obviously well capable of keeping up with the standard of play.
And you signed a new contract, of course, in the last few weeks. So you're staying for another 2 years?
Staying forever. Been here since birth, staying forever.
Yeah, like, well, how long have you been there now? How long, when was the first time you rocked 17, up to the club?
17 years, I think it is, maybe 18 years.
Wow.
I'm due a testimonial, and I'm really due too, so
You get two or three testimonials.
Until I get one.
Yeah. You grew up in Slough, isn't it? What kind of a town? Is it more like the Slough from The Office, or is it...
That's it. Anyone asks me, I try and say I'm from Windsor, so you've done your research, so I can't tell you I'm from Windsor, because obviously Windsor's like a nice area, like, but no, yeah, Slough, like, I don't know, I don't even know how to describe it.
Yeah. But you're obviously not keen to venture too far away from the place, anyway. You're never tempted to move further afield.
Obviously, I went on loan to Villa for a little bit. Obviously, I was still contracted here, but went on loan just to get some game time. But no, I'm a proper home girl. Like, I love being around my family, and the last couple of years, like, my nieces and nephews and stuff like that is just, and I love being here. Like, I love, like, I've grown up with the manager. She's been my manager since under 10. So it's not that I'm comfortable. I just know that she'll always push me, and she believes in me, and she sees, like, potential in me, so it's just nice for me to know that she's like a big sister, really.
That's great. Maybe just a bit about goalkeeping. Like, a lot of the kind of narratives we hear about women's goalkeeping is that the standard's not good enough and blah blah, and you even hear it in the debate, the goal should be smaller. Even someone as like Emma Hayes, like, well regarded in the game as her, suggested
that
it should be smaller. You had a much more interesting take on it, I thought, last year there. I was reading an interview with you where you talked about the different approaches, even between the Ireland camp and your own camp in Reading, but there was one approach where you have a more sort of female approach to goalkeeping, and then there's a more traditional approach to goalkeeping, where you, I think you suggested that in the Ireland camp, you have a more traditional approach where you come out further and you close shots down a bit more, whereas at Reading, you stay back a little bit further and guard against the shot over your head, which is a bit more inevitable in the women's game.
Yeah. That was when Colin was there, and we had a goalkeeper coach, Gianluca, and he was from Germany. So he taught a different style of goalkeeping, whereas I think he was more based around, like, the men's game and stuff like that. He was brilliant, like, in terms of, like, being a modern day goalkeeping coach, if you like. But here I've got Craig, and he's been around the women's game for a couple of years. So understands that, like, for me personally, I'm not springy. I don't think any goalkeeper in the women's game is a springy, like, gonna claw one out the top corner or anything like that. So yeah, for me personally, I have to be really footwork based. So I have to work a lot on quick feet and getting there with my feet, rather than being powerful and explosive over that distance. But yeah, I think with that, it comes down to your goalkeeper coach. Like, I find it harder being with a goalkeeper coach that's not into the modern style of the game, because I like, one of my biggest things in my game is my distribution. So, and I think, like, 85% of a goalkeeper's game now is their distribution. So, like, that for me is comes back to, like, when you look at Man City, Pep didn't like Joe Hart, but Joe Hart's probably, in my opinion, a better shot stopper than Edison. But Pep wanted someone that's better with their distribution side, and it's paid off for him. But it comes down at the end of the day to what the management wants, really, I suppose.
Yeah, so working with your feet would be one of your key attributes, I suppose.
Yeah, like playing out. But so we do, like, we sat down last season, and we were like, I was like, right, okay, like, I feel like my area that I need to be, not better, but I need to keep working on to be a massive strong point of mine is my footwork, because someone that gets there in one step, for me, it might take three steps to get to the bottom corner, for example.
Yeah.
So that was just something that we work on religiously here now.
So there is, like, there has to be, I suppose, an adaptation in the women's style to guard against certain situations which you can't possibly save.
Yeah, no, for me personally, yeah, for, I can't speak on behalf of, for example, like Carly Telford at Chelsea. Like, I think she's probably one of the only goalkeepers that I look at and I think, oh, actually, you're quite springy. So she might not necessarily look so much into doing our footwork, she might look into more like explosive stuff. But in terms of, like, the distribution stuff, like the diving, the high balls and the punches, whatever, spreading, blocking, like, I think that all just stays the same.
Like, I was going to say you must have a great spring, because, I mean, you're giving away a few inches to the likes of Marie Horahan, for instance. I mean, you wouldn't be certainly the tallest keeper in the WSL by any means.
No, yeah, I'd say I'm probably one of the, in the middle, maybe mid-bottom. I think when you get a goalkeeper in the women's game that's tall, it's rare. Like, Emma Byrne was tall as well.
Yeah.
Emma Byrne, my idol, but like when I used to be in training with her, I was always just like this, like, and stuff like that. But yeah, no, like I wouldn't say like it is a massive weakness of mine. It's definitely got better. Like, I can always improve it and I work on it every week, but it's still working alongside the footwork as well as everything else. Like,
Sure. So then, just on your Ireland career, how did you get started with Ireland? Was the FA back in, I mean, you were in the golden generation back in 2010.
Yeah.
Like, was the FAI recruitment that good that you were spotted over there? Or how did you come to the attention of the FAI back then? When did you come in first? Under 15?
Under 15, yeah. I had Noel and Harry. Noel King and Harry Kenny. Sharon Boyle. I actually don't know how it came about. I just remember going to my first training camp in the AUL, and we had a game. I think it was against the boys on the Astro there, and then just from then we just progressed into training towards our first qualification campaign, and we were in Slovenia at the time. I actually don't know how that came about. That's actually a really good question. I'll ask my dad. Yeah, I need to find that out.
And then the big tournament in 2010, which is a landmark tournament for Irish women's football, really. Getting to the final of the Euros and only losing to Spain on penalties, and quarterfinals of the World Cup, only losing to the eventual winners. And we've got so many players from that team. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, there's like, what, Nisa Sullivan, Megan Campbell was there. Rihanna, Kira Grant was there.
Claire
Shine, of course. Yeah, Harriet Scott was there, I think.
Yes. Yes.
7 or 8. Like, how would you, for starters, what was the experience like? And then, like, how come we managed to get such a good crop and keep them together? Like, what did we do right?
The experience was mad. Like, even the first phase, like, in Slovenia, I was thinking, okay, like, we'll do all right, but I can't see, like, because I remember that before that, we had a tournament in the Algarve, and I think we played, like, 2 US regions, and I think we lost both the games. So, like, obviously, going into the qualification then, and you're thinking, oh, God. We had Slovenia, I think we won 5-0. Then we had Turkey, I think it was 2 or 3. Then we had Denmark, and Denmark, like, obviously, I think they're quite a big name in women's football, to have them, like, decent players. And I think we beat them 1-0. So then we go to the Elite, and I remember it being in Ukraine, and I remember it being about 12 o'clock at night, and there must have been fireworks outside. And I remember everyone just running into the hallway, everyone thinking it's gunshots outside. So it was a great start to that anyway. But then we had Ukraine, Poland, we drew Poland, and in the last game we had to beat Sweden. And I think we had a penalty that Rihanna scored, and then I could see Megan Campbell behind this free kick, right? The wall's here, she's got it here, and she's just stepping to the side to look around the wall. And I'm thinking, if you want to make it any more obvious, like, but she literally just bent it around this wall and it's just gone straight in. And then obviously we go to Switzerland then for the finals, and then she gets another free kick, and it just swerved. I remember being straight behind, and it just swerved on. She hates me talking about it. I always say to her about it, and she hates it. She gets so embarrassed. And then obviously we lose on penalties to Spain, but that was an unbelievable. It was so hot, but it was such a good experience. The amount of fans that were there and the flags and that was just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great start to your life as an Ireland player, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah, 100%. And Noel and Harry, I always go on about them, but I love playing under them. Like, Harry, Noel would have the game plan and you'd know exactly what you were doing. And then Harry would just be there. Right, we're going out there and we're giving it everything, and just got everyone up. Like, everyone was just firing after we'd spoken. Yeah, they were brilliant. They were brilliant. I loved playing for them.
Yeah, how big a part of that? You know, you kind of, the traditional motivational approach of a male dressing room, does it work as well in a women's dressing room?
The women's one, what he did, he was... He was incredible. He just got everyone firing. He was just so like enthusiastic and just like, listen, we're giving him nothing today. And he was absolutely brilliant at that. Like, he'd get everyone up for anything.
Yeah, and like, and throwing the old teacups at halftime.
Do you know what? Like, I think because I've obviously never been in a male dressing room, in the women's game, I think you have to think a little bit more about who you're talking to. Some people can take being shouted at. Some people can't. Some people can in certain situations, like maybe in the changing room, maybe on the pitch, it's different. Like, but I think you have to be more aware of who you're talking to, definitely in the women's game.
Or is it easier coming from a female coach, maybe? Like,
easier,
like,
yeah.
Like, could a female coach probably go a bit harder on you at halftime than a male coach?
Yeah, I'd say so, because you'd probably... You wouldn't then turn around and be like, well, he doesn't know how we feel, or he's not doing this, or he's not going through this. So, like, yeah, I think you'd have your back's a bit safer if it's coming from a female coach, definitely.
Yeah. Like, it was all going well. You were under 19 player of the year. You were making your debut. You made your senior debut in 2016, replacing your hero, McBurn, wasn't it, on the Cyprus Cup?
Yeah, I think she was, I can't remember why she was coming out later in the week or something. But yeah, it was literally the day after my birthday. So it was like the best present like I could have like ever wished for. But yeah, that we lost to Austria, but it was incredible. It was such a good, but again, like my dad didn't come out to that because obviously we just thought Emma was going to play every game.
It slowed down for you then in terms of Ireland. I mean, 2016 you started and you've only made got your third cap against Germany lately. What would you, why the delay? Like, what would you put it down to?
No, I actually couldn't tell you. From you had Sue and then you had Colin and then you've got Vera now. Like with Colin was always like really straight up and honest and said he wanted a tall goalkeeper. So you just knew then, like, I'm not taller than Maria, I'm not taller than Amanda Budden. Like, I just knew then, like, that's like fine. Like, just okay. With Sue, like I don't know, like Emma was still playing then. So Emma Byrne, obviously being Emma Byrne, like, you're not gonna drop Emma. Like, she's brilliant. She's played at the top, her experience is massive. And then with Vera obviously has her what she wants her goalkeeper to be like or to do. So I don't know, like maybe I just never had the window, the opportunity until obviously December. Well, maybe like at the start of Vera's campaign, it could have been different. But maybe she didn't want to change too much. I actually can't answer that. I don't know the answer to that question.
Of those, I mean, obviously you can accept it for... To a certain extent, Emma Byrne was going to play for Ireland until she dropped nearly. I mean, until she was not able to play anymore. She'd done so much. Like, it must be hard to hear we want a taller keeper, because that's something you can't actually do anything about. I mean, you can if somebody tells you, look, I want you, you're weak on your left side, I need you to improve on that. That's something you can go and fix, but you can't really add a couple of inches. That must have been the hardest part to hear, was it?
Like for sure, because you're like, to be, when Colin came in, he just dropped me completely because I wasn't taller than three that he could pick. So that was obviously like hard at the start. And then eventually I think Marie got injured, so everyone just got moved up one. So like, I think he only took two. I think it was Amanda and Marie. And then obviously I think Marie was injured, so Amanda got moved up one and I came and sat on the bench for Amanda. But yeah, like it is, but you can only focus on what you can do and how you can kind of like, if you like, get his attention, like by playing well or whatever. So I remember when I got called in, he texted me when I was at a hotel when we were staying away for a trip against Man United, and we ended up winning 2-0. So it was a great buzz to go from beating Man United 2-0 to then going into a camp and everyone being like, oh, like it's great to have you back and stuff like that. But yeah, no, we ended up winning 4-0, I think, and Amanda kept a clean sheet, played really well. So obviously I'm really good friends with Amanda. It was me and her on the under-8 and stuff, so I was really happy for her.
Then what has Vera brought? I mean, what's she like to deal with as a manager? What's she like in the restaurant?
Obviously Vera's like really, really new for me. I've only been in with her for a couple of times, obviously with the whole Corona stuff, and obviously dropped for that camp and stuff like that. What's she bought?
You better be careful now here, because I know I did. I interviewed Saoirse Noonan during the year, and I noticed in the next press conference, Vera quoted some of the interviews. So you better be careful. She keeps an eye out on all these things. So,
She put an article out about me this morning, and she messaged me about it, and I haven't messaged her back yet, to be honest. I'll be honest, I found it took it really hard being dropped, because at the time I was the only goalkeeper playing. So for me at the minute, I have a really mixed view on the last campaign. So for me, a massive negative was being dropped. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. But it was what it was. I had to deal with it, and had to deal with it the best way that I could. And that was, for me, putting in performances where they then had to be okay, well, look what she's doing. So then after that, she dropped me. I then played Aston Villa, and we won 3-1, and then played West Ham, won and got in team of the week, and then played Man City, drew and got in team of the week. So for me then, I was then getting messages being have you changed your training? And I hadn't changed my training, but I was actually, they were actually looking then that I was actually performing. So then I feel coming back in then and then starting is the positive side of it. So yeah, the negative's being dropped, and then the positive is actually then finally playing.
Now you're the number one, I suppose, so it's up to you to hold on to it. Is that kind of how you'd look at it?
Well, with that, obviously, the article that's done on me earlier didn't make it sound like I was number one. And listen, I wouldn't expect to go into any camp and be number one if I'm performing with my club. Say, for example, Courtney's not playing or Marie's not playing or whatever, then I'd hope that I would be playing.
I suppose you don't quite yet know where you stand, really.
If I'm going to be honest with you, I've actually found it really hard.
Yeah.
My experience is really negative, if I'm being honest. If I hadn't played the last game, then the whole thing would be, but because I played the last game, it's negative and positive. It's a massive positive, but
yeah,
that's just my view on it. And
that's very honest. The World Cup qualification is obviously the next big thing. I mean, what do Ireland need to do to take the next step? There must be huge frustration. I also sensed there was a lot of pressure on you and in the camp qualify. Did you feel that pressure in the last campaign? You know, you've all of a sudden you've got a lot more attention in Ireland. There is a lot more, you're role models for a lot more people. I got a sense towards some of those bigger games that there was a lot of focus and a lot of pressure that this was going to be the big breakthrough for women's football. Did you think people felt that a bit in the camp, and it weighed down a little bit in the crucial couple of games?
No, I wouldn't say that at all. I think we have the players that have the experience from big games and can step up and did step up. It was really unfortunate, the goal obviously in the Ukraine game, and obviously Katie on any other day would hit the back of the net. We definitely have the players, and I don't feel like anyone experienced or felt like there was any extra pressure. We fully believed in ourselves that we could qualify and that we would qualify. Obviously didn't go that way, but the next couple of months are all about the preparation and stuff, and as long as we're prepared and we're organized going into September, I fully believe that in every game we can pick up a result regardless of who we're playing. We have great players, brilliant players, and even coming through Ellen and Emily, Jess Sue, we have a great squad. I'd back us against anyone to pick up a draw or a win, but I just think we have to be organised and prepared to the best that we can to be able to do that.
And there was a huge lot of positives. I mean, the crowds at the home games, the general feeling of positivity around it, and a lot more attention around it was obviously...
Yeah, for sure. The messages and stuff, even before the Germany game, obviously there was no fans allowed to be in there, but there was all posters and messages all around the changing room and all down the tunnel and stuff like that, which was brilliant as well. Obviously you can't beat having a crowd there, which I'm sure when all this is over, there'll be record crowds again. But the support's always been first class. And obviously I've been around the setup for years, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing each campaign.
Sure. Just briefly then on the something Vera mentioned yesterday again in her one of her press conferences, in terms of the kind of the search for equality between the men and the women's teams, and how some of the federations now are paying the players equally for call-ups and stuff. Do you believe it should be done? How much would it mean to the women players to be paid the same as the men for a call-up? Is it possible in the short term? Should it be done straight away?
For me, like I feel like I have a different opinion on it to everyone else. Like I feel like a lot of people, when people think that women players think they should get played the same as men's players, I don't think that's the case. I just think that people, like one of the girls that's come in here, for example, Jess Fishlock, she's Welsh, but she plays for a team in America. And the standards that she's come in and demanded, if you like, has been absolutely brilliant, like in terms of just little things that we can do better and stuff like that. But I know at the minute she's doing the Welsh equivalent of what you've just asked me, so trying to get the equal pay for the women's over there and the men. And I know that she was saying like realistically, they're not going to get like $5,000 a game like the fellas do, but they need to have things put in place that prepare them better, if you like, for games. So like having the Normatex, which like compress your legs, and an extra like massage person and stuff like that. And I think for the girls, I think just having them things there that take it up to the next level of professionalism means more than having, for me, speaking for me, means more than having the same amount of money. Because I don't think it's realistic to demand like $5,000 a game when people aren't even getting that in 2 months in the women's like league. Like some players, the wage thing can go from like $15,000 to like $100,000. Like the gap's just massive, like in the WSL. So I think at the minute, like are like fighting for equal pay, if the gap's like from us getting what, like say £200 a game to the fellas getting like $5,000 a game, like the gap's massive. But I just think in terms of preparing us for a qualifier or a friendly with the best possible like protein bars, if you like compression stuff, like the recovery stuff and stuff like that's just more important for me than demanding that at this moment in time.
Yeah, no, I still think it wouldn't hurt if the men's international team decided to almost lead the campaign for equality between the two squads.
I think obviously like when with like England and stuff, when they meet up, all their girls are obviously like professional, coming from the WSL or the league in America. So they come over and they're like, they're contracted anyway. I think they're on like $30,000 a year just for the England stuff. Whereas when we go away, there's obviously some people that have to take time off work. And stuff like that, so obviously might not necessarily get paid from work. So for me, I just like the equal pay thing is just, it's just something I don't even think about. I just think having the standards and the same professionalism as the men's, not in terms of like our attitude and stuff, just the basic needs that we require, if you like.
And were you around the squad for the strike 3-4 years ago?
So that was Colin's first camp, and that was the one that he dropped me from. So
right.
I wasn't in that. But
so yeah. How much have conditions improved since that?
Yeah, like obviously in terms of like we get a tracksuit and that now,
that was a start, all right, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. No, like obviously you want to turn up and you want to look like professional and stuff like that. Obviously getting paid and stuff now. But yeah, no, I do feel like the environment's definitely more professional. I think we've gone from like here to here. I still think we can go to there with it. But obviously like with the whole like COVID stuff at the minute, it would have been nice to have a camp, because I feel like everyone else on the team's gone off with their national team and we're kind of like your team out, if you like. So yeah. I do think it definitely has been more professional since that.
Well, listen, you've been great with your time, Grace. Like, what are the big ambitions from now on? I mean, you're only getting going as a goalkeeper at 27. I mean, you can go on forever in that job. what are the big ambitions from here?
Obviously, like I've played for Ireland now, and I just want to keep doing that, and I want to be playing and be consistent here. Like, I don't have any, they are basically my goals, but I don't have any, oh, I want to win this, I want to win that. I want to be consistent, and I want to play for Reading, and I want to play for Ireland and be consistent with both. So for me, that is my main focus. I'll look at everything that I'm doing in between and how I can affect and do both them things.
And in this series, we asked a couple of quick questions at the end. Who is your toughest player you've played against, and who would have been your goalkeeping hero growing up, or your even your footballing hero, whatever?
Toughest player I've played against, Miedema. She always scores about 3 or 4 on me. Fran Kirby and Miedema, I'd say. Yeah. I'm going to say Sam Kerr as well, because I absolutely smashed her the other year after about 15 minutes and got sent off, so I found that quite tough.
Can I just say, every time I watch Sam Kerr, for some reason, she seems to be missing sitters. I don't know, am I just watching her at the wrong time?
No, I think she took a while to find her feet, bless her, but she's getting there now.
She's like, she keeps getting in. I mean, she's unbelievable getting into the positions. Like,
positions, yeah. No, a lot of people have said that, to be fair.
Your hero growing up.
Emma Byrne, hands down, Emma Byrne. Everyone. I remember Denise O'Sullivan batters me all the time when we was on the same camp. Like, she's like, oh, Emma's there, or whatever. But no, Emma Byrne. And she knows that as well.
Were you overawed when you met her?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I remember my first camp. It was in Holland, and it was before we went away to the World Cup, and we were at the airport, because I think we landed at Luton, and they went off to Arsenal after that, and I went back to Reading. She gave me her gloves, and I was just like, oh, my God. But yeah, no, she's just an absolute legend. Like, she's just an unbelievable presence to have around the camp. Like, I miss her. I miss training with her. She just demanded so much. She was brilliant.
Brilliant, Grace. That's a great way to finish. Thanks a million again.
No, you're more than welcome.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.